About a month ago, I logged into Facebook and did a quick scroll through my newsfeed, and an ad jumped out at me for something called Black Privilege KC. The phrasing of it definitely caught me by surprise and made me do a double take. So I clicked and found out that this was an app you could use to find Black-owned businesses in the metro, the idea being there are people out there who would support Black-owned businesses if they had a platform to connect. I'm Gina Kaufman. Today on KCUR's Central Standard, we're finding out more about this app, including why they chose Kansas City to pilot the concept. And we're also asking whether you make consumer choices that represent your values or ideals or politics. How do you do it? Call 816-235-2888. Reggie Gray, Executive Director of Black Privilege, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much, Gina. I'm so excited to be here today.
I'm so excited to have you. Give me the quick elevator pitch for this thing. What is it?
Well, the Black Privilege mobile app is a mixture of Yelp, Facebook, and LinkedIn, but for Black-owned businesses and the community. And when I say the community, I don't mean just the Black community. I mean the entire community. But I do just want to add that Black Privilege is a nonprofit organization whose mission is to connect and to educate and to empower the urban community through economic gardening and technology.
So what besides the app is part of the organization's projects?
Well, we're doing a lot of outreach. We have monthly events. And as you mentioned earlier about our social media, we quickly found out that we are content creators. We're all about highlighting businesses and people that look like me, but in a positive light. Because the reality is, when you talk about social media, when you talk about mainstream media, unfortunately, they don't depict minorities overall in the most positive light. They depict what's going to sell and what's going to make people look and watch. No, there are a lot of great Black fathers. There are a lot of great Black businesses. So that's what we're about highlighting.
Can you give me an example of a time when, as a consumer of media or someone who uses social media, you saw something on there that was like, oh no, not this?
Yeah, unfortunately, and a lot of this even comes from my own community in regards to the things we share. We like to share people fighting. We like to share profanity. We like to share showing our kids not doing things that they should be focused on, like reading, education, extracurricular activities. They want to show their kids going word for word to rap songs that degrade women, glorify drugs and sex, and let's just be honest, all that stuff that sits on all of us. So we just want to make sure that everything that we touch is positive and it's also inclusive. I have to keep saying that word.
What is it that you like about that word?
I've learned over time that even though this movement may focus on the Black community and Black businesses, it takes a village. It takes all of us. And there's so many phenomenal non-Black people who get it. And when I say who get it, they understand that things in life aren't fair. Things in society aren't as we all may think. And they want to spread their own money and joy and love. So one thing about this movement is we love everyone. We want to see everyone win. But the reality is, my people collectively are at the bottom. And I'm not pointing any fingers. We ain't going back in past. It's time to move forward. But when we look at Black folk collectively, we're the only demographic that does not consistently invest in our own. We're the only ones. No one else who, no other ethnicity does what we do.
So the name Black Privilege, I feel like you're kind of getting at that in some of what you just said. Can you talk to me about that name? Because it does really catch you by surprise. And when you see it out of context, you don't know who it's coming from, what they're trying to say.
Jeannie, you are so right. And it's amazing because we really had to push the founder on that because he was more old school, probably wanted something like the National Black, something like that. And I had to remind him that this is the 21st century and you have to be able to catch people. You have to be able to get them to question and do some research and some due diligence. So Black Privilege just means that we're privileged to be Black and that we're learning to love ourselves and build and grow. But when people see that on the outside, unfortunately, if they don't do any research, which the majority of people on social media don't, they just look at something and then they give their feedback. So we've had so many amazing interactions and conversations with people of all ethnicities who just have questions, and we explain, and we said, that's the reason. So we can talk and we can have a positive, open dialogue.
So getting back to the app, why pilot this in Kansas City?
Oh, Kansas City. Well, first of all, I'm not from Kansas City myself, but I've been here for over a decade and this is home now. Kansas City is a special city. Most people from the inside and outside wouldn't realize that this is one of the top cities for Black business owners. We probably have more Black-owned restaurants here than the majority of major markets.
So you're talking about the number of businesses.
Correct. And when we're talking about the number of businesses, of course, we're talking about sole proprietors, service-based. So we're just talking about all Black folk who have some type of business going on. But come on, Kansas City is one of the number one markets for entrepreneurs. I mean, we have Kauffman Foundation here. I mean, we're resource rich here. So the founder out of L.A., everyone was telling him, you need to be in Atlanta, Chicago, Charlotte, more progressive cities for African-Americans. And we looked at it like, if this is successful in Kansas City, of all places, it will be successful anywhere in the country.
Can you elaborate on Kansas City of all places?
Well, as someone, as I said, who's not from here, when people hear of Kansas City, it's Midwest. As someone who's always been an entrepreneur, I would always jokingly say, this is a city of scared money. This is a conservative market. Something called Black privilege launching in a conservative market. I'm just saying, a lot of folk would say this market isn't ready for something like this. Are there progressive African Americans here? Yes. But when you speak about collectively, not as much. I mean, as much as I love our downtown, I'm used to major markets where downtown's been popping for 20, 30, 40 years. Our downtown just got going in the last decade. So it's a market that's on the come up.
Well, you talked about the entrepreneurship community here, the resources mm-hmm. for entrepreneurs here. And you've also talked about your love for the word inclusive. Is that an inclusive community? Is that an inclusive set of resources? Does that opportunity extend to people of color in equal force?
Although we have a long way to go in everything in regards to all minorities, I'm so optimistic. And I'll tell you, I even participated in the Scale Up program. And I'm one of those people where I don't believe in giving excuses. I don't care what color you are. If you want to get something done, you find a way to get it done. And Kansas City is full of so many opportunities. Yes, there are people that may judge you in certain doors and areas, but that's life. It's going to happen anywhere.
But do you think that the opportunity for entrepreneurs extends to people of color in equal force here?
I won't say equal, but I will say that it does extend. It's amazing that since we've launched Black Privilege, the organizations that have reached out to us, and you'd be surprised that it's not the Black organizations that's focused on Black folk. It's the organizations that would be considered more mainstream in Kansas City that believe in what we're doing and that want to make sure that our population knows that they're there and that they open their doors to assist. But FAIR, we have a long way to go.
What are the challenges?
I think the challenges are twofold, because I think the challenges come from within my own community as well. Unfortunately, in my community, and I don't speak for everyone, but just from what I see, I think that many folk just want to stay in their own bubble. They don't want to step outside of their comfort zone, step outside of their box, go to an event where they may be the only minority or the only Black person there. because we are in a city where we're not the majority as far as the greater Kansas City. We're not.
Conversely, being the only white person there.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty much. So we're just trying to get folk to get it. I do think that our entrepreneurial community does open their arms to try to help. And we're starting to have more conversations about race relations. But I will say this, when it comes to raising money, we are definitely at the bottom of the pack. And I definitely think that the politics are against us in this market, especially. And not just for regular entrepreneurs, also for Black founders of nonprofit organizations.
Well, I'm going to get back to some of this with you, but I want to bring in a young entrepreneur here in town who's gotten on the Black Privilege app to hear a little bit of her story. Taya Adair, good morning.
Good morning.
Tell me about your business.
So my business is called A Beautiful, Wonderful Me. Pretty much the basis. Growing up, I struggled a lot with my self-image, like I know so many other young girls, not feeling beautiful, not feeling good about myself. And it was about, I was about 23, I'm 26 right now. And I had to learn how to love myself. And I discovered the importance of speaking positive affirmations over my life and speaking life. And it was one night I was in my bed and I was just not feeling so good about myself, and God gave me an affirmation to write for me, and I titled it A Beautiful, Wonderful Me. And then upon looking at that positive affirmation that I wrote for myself at 23, God gave me the idea to share this message with young girls because a lot of them don't feel beautiful, they don't feel good enough, and I just wanted to encourage them that way. And so that affirmation turned into a book. And after that, I did a lot of research and got it turned into a book, and then I saw that it was possible, and from that I started writing many other books. I have a book called My Crown of Glory, which is a short poem that encourages young Black girls to love their natural hair. I have another book called Fart Bubbles, which is so fun. It encourages kids to get creative. So A Beautiful, Wonderful Me is just a platform that I created to just encourage kids to love themselves, to be positive, to get creative, and to not let anything hold them back. And that's through books, and I have apparel as well.
So can you tell me a little more about the business aspect of this?
Mm-hmm. So with A Beautiful, Wonderful Me, like I said, I have the books and the apparel, and I try to just use that to encourage kids. Like, I've gone to schools to speak to kids, and I have a YouTube channel that I'm starting to just encourage them. And all I want to do, I just want to encourage and inspire and uplift through whatever I do. Right now, I just have the books and the apparel, but like, the sky is the limit. I don't know where God is going to take it, but I'm just excited to see where it's all going to go. I'm in the beginning stages still.
So how are you hoping to use the Black Privilege app? What do you want to get out of that?
Most definitely connect. As far as Black Privilege, being able to help A Beautiful, Wonderful Me, like I said, I have books and apparel, so connecting and trying to find graphic designers, illustrators, because it's just something so special to me to connect with Black individuals. My book, My Crown of Glory, I use this company called Fiverr, and the lady that did the illustrations was all the way in Ireland. She wasn't a Black lady, but it's like, it would mean a lot for me to just keep my money and support my own community. That's just something that's really important to me, and Black Privilege can help with that. And as well as just me personally wanting to support Black business, it's just amazing what Black Privilege is doing for the Black community. I'm excited.
It's interesting to me that you're not just looking for people to support you, as in like to buy your books or to mm-hmm. buy the apparel, mm-hmm. but you're looking for people to hire
Correct.
And involve in your process or collaborate with.
Correct.
Have you had the networking opportunities you need to accomplish that in some other platform, or is this truly like that first opportunity for you?
As far as connecting with other Black individuals, a lot of the time it's just like, if I talk to somebody and I find out that they do pictures or they draw or something, then that's how I make the connection. But I feel like Black Privilege is important because if you look at the app, it's so it's organized in a way, and it's like she said, centralized, to where I can find exactly what I need. So if I need a person for graphic design, I can go to like the little tab that lists all those type of people.
I mean, what has your experience been as far as networking for entrepreneurs in Kansas City? Has race felt like an obstacle there, or?
Kind of, not really. But when I was getting into business, I was doing a lot of research. And it's kind of hard to find Black entrepreneurs in Kansas City. You have to, like, really, really search or really know somebody. And the kind of person I am, I'm not out there. A lot of people don't know who I am. So I'm just looking on the internet trying to find individuals. And there's a lot of good organizations out there for entrepreneurs. And I attended, it was an entrepreneur week. I think it was hosted by, like, Casey Sourcelink or something like that. But like Mr. Reggie said, there weren't too many African-American individuals, and you just feel kind of like lonely. It's just nice to be able to have somebody to connect with and somebody to relate to. And when I was also doing my research, I noticed that there is a lot of entrepreneur cities like thriving, like in Atlanta and Chicago and Philadelphia. And they have like this major network of entrepreneurs who are able to connect and just help each other grow. And we don't have that in Kansas City. And I feel like Black privilege can start that.
Reggie, jump in here just a little bit, because you were nodding when Taya was saying that you have to really work hard to find Black entrepreneurs here. It's not what she's saying is not that there aren't a lot of Black entrepreneurs here, but that she shows up at an event and she's the only Black person.
Correct. And Taya, first of all, I just want to say I'm just so proud of Taya and just how talented and amazing and ambitious she is. But I'm from Baltimore, of Maryland, a very Black city. Kansas City is not a very Black city. And Taya brought up some good points when she was talking about other markets that are more progressive. Here, there are so many phenomenal, talented, resourceful, ambitious Black entrepreneurs. But here, we're not as connected. And unfortunately, the stereotype is probably more true here in regards to we're like crabs in a barrel here, where when one starts to get up and out, the other ones pull them down. We don't hear, and I don't speak for all Black people, I got to keep saying that, but here it feels like we aren't connected. We're not building and growing together. Because those of us who know about a market like Atlanta, Atlanta's bustling, but Atlanta has, oh my goodness, so much Black wealth. Maryland, the number one state for Black wealth. California, the second biggest state for Black wealth. Here, when you talk about Black wealth, the only folk most people can say is maybe Tech Nine and some professional athletes.
I want to clarify just a couple of things. When you say Kansas City is not a very Black city, what do you mean by that?
Okay. I know that the Kansas City metro has a higher percentage of African Americans. But when you talk about the greater Kansas City, I think we're anywhere from between that 11 and 13%. And we're cliquish. But when it comes to being entrepreneurs and being strategic and building and growing, we don't do that well. We don't work well together when it comes to building wealth, when it comes to diversifying, when it comes to lifting one another up. We're not progressive in that. We're not a Charlotte in that aspect.
What does a Charlotte do differently?
Well, and I've got to be careful in the comparisons, only because a place like Charlotte is a big banking city and it has HBCUs all around it. So it's
historically Black.
Yes. Thank you for saying that.
Colleges.
Black colleges and universities. And one thing that I've always been in my life comes from my upbringing is what makes anyone powerful, but especially Black folk, is education, period. And I don't mean just going to college. I mean educating yourself, finding knowledge. So here, folk, in my opinion, who in the communities I've been in, we're not chasing education. We're not chasing knowledge. And we're trying to keep up with the Joneses. We're not trying to build each other up. And
Taya, does this resonate with your experience here?
It most definitely does. Just being a young person, like I said, I'm 26. You do see a lot of people not supporting. And a lot of the time, from my experience, people don't support until you blow up. And it's like, it kind of sucks because it's like you look at Janelle Monae. She's from Kansas City. I really didn't hear too many people talking about her until she like went off and did her own thing. And she's like, I don't know if she's in L.A. or wherever she is, but she's right here in Kansas City. And I feel like at the beginning, a lot of people didn't support her because she's different. And it just sucks that a lot of individuals in Kansas City are stuck in that mindset. They don't want to do better, especially like just as a young individual. A lot of people are stuck in I guess I got to be careful with my word, like in a poverty mindset. They don't want to grow. They don't want to do better. And it's like there's so much talent in Kansas City. People have so many gifts, so many talents, and it just sucks that people don't support. And if people realize like the power that they have in supporting and wanting to do better, and you never know, like, when you, with Black Privilege, it's bringing light to a lot of Black businesses. There's even a lot of young entrepreneurs. I'm a part of this, the Royal Youth Vendor Squad. Kids are like 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and they have their own businesses. And this is just bringing light to encourage and inspire others to maybe start their own businesses.
Have you, as a consumer, as someone who wants to support other Black entrepreneurs, have mm-hmm. you found a lot of opportunities you didn't know about to do that?
Through Black Privilege?
Yeah.
Most definitely. There's so many people, and a lot of the time people think, when you think of like Black entrepreneurs, you think of like hairstylists, you think of like the cooks, the restaurants and all that kind of stuff. But there's so many creative people. You have this YouTuber, she's from Kansas City, she has this major following. You have content creators, you have graphic designers, you have authors, you have so many people in so many different avenues, and I appreciate Black Privilege for this because it just brings light to all the entrepreneurs in Kansas City.
Well, Taya Adair, I know you have someplace to be, but thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm Gina Kaufman, and the executive director of Black Privilege, launching here in Kansas City, the app anyway, will be staying with us as we take your calls, 816-235-2888. How do you consume and do business in keeping with your values and social ideals? Is there an app for that? 816-235-2888. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and I'm talking to Reggie Gray, who's piloting his concept for an app called Black Privilege here in Kansas City. He's hoping to connect Black entrepreneurs with each other and with the customers who want to support them. Hi, Reggie.
Hey, Gina.
So now let's take a step back and talk to a sociologist. To put this whole thing in context, Adia Harvey Wingfield is with us from Washington University in St. Louis. Hi, Adia.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm good, thanks for having me.
So as someone who's written extensively about gender, race, and class in entrepreneurship, what interests you about the conversation we've been having so far?
Well, I think it's a great idea that actually has an important long-term historical precedent. There's been a long history of Black business owners trying to make sure that they could make sure that Black consumer markets in particular were aware of the services that they provided and the things that they could offer. Even if you look back to the era of segregation, there was a way in which Black entrepreneurs would make sure that Black customers knew that they had businesses that were available, that wouldn't discriminate against Black patrons, that would be places where they could spend their money and use their services. So to me, what this strikes me as is a really innovative way of updating that historical way of reaching out for the 21st century and really applying this idea of there's an app for that, for something that's been around for a long period of time, and making it really relevant today.
How does the issue of access when it comes to the things entrepreneurs need to succeed, how does that play out in the 21st century?
Well, I think, unfortunately, a lot of the challenges that are present today are challenges that have been present for a long time. I think that Reggie in particular mentioned access to financing and the things that entrepreneurs need in order to be successful. I know from my research that for many Black entrepreneurs across a variety of areas, this issue of having access to the financing and the capital that they need in order to be successful has historically been a long-term challenge. And that's not one that's necessarily gone away in our current modern environment or modern economy. So to me, again, the idea of devising an app to make sure that consumers can have access to Black businesses and that Black businesses can reach each other and reach potential consumer markets really strikes me as an ingenious way of trying to alleviate some of these structural challenges that are present.
Historically, I think some of the other movements that you've referenced have really appealed specifically to Black consumers. in terms of keeping money in the Black community. And this seems different in that it's reaching out more broadly to any consumer looking to maybe make a difference when it comes to issues of inequality. Can you talk about this moment?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that may be true. I think that any entrepreneur will want to reach as broad and wide of a market as possible. But I think that when it comes to Black business owners in particular, there's often a particular interest in wanting to give back to or serve Black communities in particular. I know I found from a lot of my research that for Black business owners, a driving force in becoming entrepreneurs has been that they were particularly aware of a particular void in the market that they knew that they could reach as Black entrepreneurs, whether it was reaching consumer groups that were underserved or developing businesses that were specifically attuned to the needs of women of color, like your previous guest. I think that's been a real driving force in many Black entrepreneurs' decisions and motivations for engaging in business ownership. So while this does seem like an app that would be available to everyone and something that anyone could use, it also strikes me as something that would have a particular focus on Black communities and really wanting to engage in that process of uplift and support.
Tell me more just about those particular needs of, for example, young Black women who are entrepreneurs.
Well, so, for example, the previous guest mentioned wanting to do something that would be really affirmative for young Black women. That's incredibly important, but also something that Black women entrepreneurs in particular might be particularly attuned to out of their own experience or those of friends or family members that they see struggling with these issues related to race or gender. In some of my previous research, I focused specifically on Black women in the hair industry. And what I learned from a lot of my respondents was that they went into that industry specifically because they were aware of a lot of the challenges, the social challenges that Black women face around their hair, and these struggles with Black women in particular being seen as people who are beautiful, who are attractive, whose hair is something that's valuable and special and important, rather than hair being seen as something that was a marker of their devaluation. So again, these are examples of ways that Black business owners have a particular insight into certain challenges that might be facing Black communities and ways in which they can develop businesses that speak specifically to those challenges that might not be as apparent to people who are not enmeshed in those communities.
Okay, Adia, hang on with us. We're going to talk with Reggie a little more and with our callers, but we'll come back to you, okay?
Okay, sounds great.
So, Reggie, talk to me about what you're hearing. I mean, you're not just talking about Black consumers supporting Black-owned businesses.
Correct. And I just want to mention this as well. This app also provides resources, job opportunities. So not only can a user go on the app and find different Black-owned businesses in their community, but they can also check out resources for women, entrepreneurs, homelessness, substance abuse. So that means that there's a plethora of different things that can keep users engaged and connected. So that's why we say the Yelp, Facebook, and LinkedIn, because it's much more than just a directory of Black-owned businesses. And we learned this because we're not the first app to do something similar as this, but we're the first app to be fully functional and to be able to provide more than just a directory of businesses.
What do you think is the role, more broadly speaking, of consumer choice in fighting inequality or making any kind of social change happen?
I would say I think it all starts, one thing we say about this movement is it's rebranding Blackness. This is not an only by Black movement, because this is the 21st century. We have to be realistic. But what this is those in my community, we have to change the way we think. We have to change our mindset. And that takes maturity. That takes growth. That takes education. That takes parents changing the ways that they're raising their children. But it's now time for us to think differently of how we spend our money, save our money, and invest our money. And we want the Black Privilege Mobile App platform to be able to have resources and exposure for all of that.
Let's talk with Kimberly. Kimberly is joining us from Overland Park at 816-235-2888. Hi, Kimberly.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me. You know, as I listen to Reggie and you guys discuss Kansas City and Black entrepreneurs, entrepreneurs, so many things come to mind. I'm an insurance broker based in Overland Park, and my dad ran a black business in Midtown on Troost for my entire life. So the attitude of running my own business, running my own enterprise was foremost in my thinking. But guys, I'm hard-pressed to recruit young black people in Kansas City to get on board with really running your own business. Even in my own family, had a young, you know, cousin who went to Phoenix University online. I offered her an opportunity to be in a male-focused business in insurance and to mentor her in this small pond in Kansas City. She turned me down. Next thing I know, she's on Facebook asking for a job. I don't know if my experience with my family being entrepreneurs, being from Southern to, you know, Northern black folk in the immigrant way where you have to make your own way. I don't know if that's organic in me, but I want to bring young people along in Kansas City, but I don't see a spark.
You know, I am interested in maybe generational trends when it comes to entrepreneurship here, and specifically black entrepreneurship here.
Well, I will say this. First of all, Kimberly is special because, similar to myself, it was in her DNA. She saw it growing up, and that's so important. And speaking of generational entrepreneurship and wealth, Kansas City is a powerhouse in regards to that. In my opinion, I mean, when you look at families like the Gates family, and I could go on and on, but these are generations that have built businesses. When you really talk about why Kansas City is on the map for barbecue, it was a black man even before the Gates that really transcended the game for us here. But real quickly, I just want to say, Kimberly, if you're still listening, please download the app, add your business to it, and then watch as we continue to start getting young users and engaging. You can post in the live feed. You can set up your own group. You can add events, because I definitely feel your frustration, Kimberly. But the reality is, that's why we created this platform. So those who are serious have a place to go.
Let's talk to Kendu in Kansas City, Missouri. Hi, Kendu.
Hey there. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks for joining us.
First and foremost, I'd like to say thank you to Reggie, because this is very interesting and very much well needed. Also, I would like to say thank you to you, Gina, because this is an excellent thing to cover, and you're asking all of the right questions. I'm loving this conversation that we're having.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. A couple of quick things. I would like to touch on what Kimberly just said and generational entrepreneurship. This app is excellent because it offers so many great things, and we have to start somewhere. I'm hearing a lot of great things coming up in the conversation about, I love the fact that Reggie said, you know, I'm not one for excuses. That is important. We have to change the way people think in general before we expect change. We have to change the, you know, thought process and the way we carry ourselves and the way we talk and our perspective on things. And that's important. And that, you know, can come down to an individual basis. But the important thing is that this app offers so many resources. I actually just researched it yesterday on Startland, I believe. And then today, turn on the radio and I hear this. So I'm definitely tuning in. I'm definitely inspired. And I love everything that it has to offer. I'm also interested in getting people on board with this.
When you say with this, what do you mean? Do you mean the app, or do you mean with a bigger idea?
I'm sorry, I'm a little overwhelmed, but I think the idea, everything, the app, the idea, the experience, the connectivity, because I'm hearing a lot of things in this conversation that I definitely have said to other people myself, such as Kansas City feels disconnected. It feels clicky. It feels like people don't support each other. Sure, you will find these things in any city, but he said, if you make it in Kansas, you can make it anywhere. And that's something that I have said for a very long time, and it makes people uncomfortable. But in an uncomfortable space is where you see growth. So yes, this is not a one-stop shop, a fix-all. This is a great resource, an excellent tool, an inspiring method to start to build an infrastructure for something bigger 5 years from now, 10 years from now, and greater, to make sure that we can compete with some of those markets.
Well, thank you for that call, Kendu. And Reggie, any last words on what Kendu's saying?
Oh, wow. Just Kendu, Kimberly, just know that you all are the leaders of our city, and we need you to be connected with us. If you're on Facebook inboxes, I'm the crazy one that's running everything, so I will respond.
Reggie Gray, thanks so much. And Adia Harvey Wingfield, thank you too. Up next, Mayor Sly James has another year in office, but candidates are lining up to take his place. We'll find out more about them on KCUR's Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and Lisa Rodriguez. Good morning. Lisa is KCUR's evening newscaster, and she has compiled a handy guide to the many candidates hoping to be the next mayor of Kansas City, Missouri, when Sly James' term is up. And Lisa, when is that election?
That will be April 2nd, 2019. So we are just under a year.
So compared to how early we start talking about candidates for national office, that's like right around the corner. But local politics, not the same kind of buildup.
Not quite the same kind of buildup, but there are certainly candidates that have been known and announced for quite some time. But I think that there are people that anticipate that there may be another candidate or two in the mix before too long.
So it's a crowded field, and we have just a little time. Let's start to get to know these folks. We'll run through them real quick. Tell me about Rita Berry.
Rita Berry is a Kansas City businesswoman. She was formerly the general manager at a gospel station, KGGN 890 AM. But now she spends most of her time volunteering at church. Her family runs a funeral home in Kansas City. And so she tells me that, you know, she sees the effect of Kansas City's gun violence problem firsthand. But she's kind of, I don't think her campaign fundraising has really started in earnest yet. So she hasn't raised some of the huge amounts of money that some of the other candidates do. But she's kind of running on this not a politician, kind of a woman of the people platform.
Tell me about Alicia Kennedy.
Alicia Kennedy, she is finishing her first term as a Kansas City Councilwoman. She represents the 5th District, so that's part of the south and east parts of Kansas City. She just announced 2 weeks ago, and she was, before she was on the council, she was the assistant prosecuting attorney for Jackson County. So she's been, you know, in her time on the council, really involved in some of those legal issues, the lowering penalties for marijuana, she was a really vocal voice for. But when she announced for mayor, she announced on an initiative to promote equitable economic development throughout the city. She's been a big critic of some of the tax breaks that Kansas City has given to developers, namely the developers of the 3-light, 2-light, the luxury apartment high rises in Kansas City.
Let's hear a little bit about Phil Glynn.
Phil Glynn is one of the so far three candidates who's not currently serving on the city council. He owns a small business in the Crossroads District that finances and supports housing development projects in American Indian communities. But he was previously on Kansas City's TIF Commission, which awards incentives to developers. And he was notably a few years ago removed from that commission for what was at the time kind of a controversial vote not to grant incentives to build the new BNIM headquarters in the Crossroads. So he was removed for that for that appointment. So he's also very interested in development, equitable development in Kansas City.
And Jolie Justice, a very familiar name in local politics.
She is a very familiar name in local politics, a former state senator, also in her first term on the Kansas City Council representing the 4th District. So that's downtown Midtown. She was the head of the airport committee this year. So she's had a very prominent role in campaigning for the new single terminal at KCI. She's also been a vocal advocate of expanding the streetcar line. So she's kind of been one of those that we've known for a long time that she was in this race for mayor.
What do we need to know about Steve Miller?
Steve Miller is an attorney in Kansas City, and he previously served as chairman of the Missouri Highways and Transportation Commission. So if we've been following infrastructure in the state, we know that's kind of a cash-strapped division that with a whole bunch of infrastructure projects. So he kind of oversaw, you know, that budget and billions of dollars in infrastructure projects. And then maybe unsurprisingly is also that's kind of a central tenet, according to his campaign website, of his platform as well. And also an advocate for streetcar expansion south to UMKC.
Jermaine Reed, another very familiar name.
Another very familiar name, Jermaine. He has also announced early on. So we've known that he was going to be in this race. He is finishing his second term with the Kansas City Council. So he will be termed out, represents the 3rd district, has been a very vocal advocate for Kansas City's historic 18th and Vine district, was part of the American Jazz Museum's board of directors. And he's also been behind efforts to push more development in his district, and notably even last week, the opening of the Sunfresh at Linwood and Prospect, which has kind of been considered a food desert. I imagine that will be a big part of his campaign. He's been behind that push for several years.
With all the controversy surrounding particularly the American Jazz Museum and his role on the board of directors at that institution, do you think that that's going to affect his run?
It may. He's been a very vocal advocate of the process and still been kind of an advocate for the museum as other council members have kind of piled on and wanted to immediately cut off funding for the museum and see the entire board be refreshed. He's kind of advised to let's hold off on that. Let's give them a chance to make these changes. And whether or not that is a winning or not argument in the long run, we'll see.
Scott Taylor. Tell me about Scott Taylor.
Scott Taylor is another one that we've known is going to run for mayor for a very long time. He's been the biggest fundraiser of all these candidates so far, has the most cash on hand for his campaign. He's also in his second term on the city council, representing South Kansas City, the 6th district. And he's also introduced a Revive the East Side campaign. So I imagine that will also be kind of a central point as this campaign season really kicks off in earnest. He was also notably in the airport debate, an opponent of Edgemore, which is the developer that was eventually selected. He supported Burns and McDonald, the Kansas City firm, from the start. He's been very actively campaigning for a while.
So I asked you about Jermaine Reed and the controversy surrounding the American Jazz Museum, how that might affect his run. What about the airport controversy and how that might affect the runs of Jolie Justice and Scott Taylor?
I think they have to be hopeful that this process with the airport continues to go forward and is successful. And we definitely want to avoid any situation that was like the procurement process, which, for all its complications, was viewed pretty negatively by a lot of Kansas Cityans. And when we come to Scott Taylor, there was a large part of the city that was also rooting for Burns and McDonald that was not happy that they weren't awarded the contract. So, you know, even though he didn't come out on the winning side of that particular debate in the council, he may have support from a large part of the city because of his stance on that.
What about Scott Wagner? He's the remaining candidate who's entered the race so far for the next Kansas City, Missouri mayor after Sly James, who we have not yet talked about.
Yes. Scott Wagner is the last that we know about that has either announced or formed a campaign committee specifically for mayor. And he's currently Kansas City's mayor pro tem, represents 1st District up in the Northland. And he's also on his second term in the city council, so he'll be termed out. Scott Wagner's a small business owner, has background in marketing and public relations. He led a push over the last year to implement a rental inspection program. So that would, the aim in that is to really get at landlords that are leaving these absentee landlords that are letting their apartments crumble and making people live in these situations. But that did not advance in the council. It is the subject of an initiative petition, a citizen initiative petition, so he may still be campaigning on that as well. And he's also taken a role in the city's effort to exert greater oversight of the American Jazz Museum at 18th and Vine. So has been at odds sometimes with Jermaine Reed on point as well.
So as someone who is doing professionally, what a lot of people might begin to start undertaking personally, which is taking these names, the information that the candidates are putting out there about themselves, and really trying to dig in and figure out, like, no, but what is this person's record? And what has this person actually done? And what might I want to watch out for? Can you talk about the process of going from what candidates are saying about themselves to digging in and really putting a story and an understanding of the candidate behind, like, a bullet point resume, which tells you very little on some level?
Right, right. And it's easier for some candidates than others, obviously, because for anyone who's served on the city council, there's a track record. That's something that, you know, that I, as with my time at City Hall, have been watching. And a lot of these, you know, what we just went over, those are basic bullet points. That's what we'll probably find on campaign websites for any of these candidates. But for me, it will be particularly a push in the next few months of getting to know those who have not been elected officials before, and going to the campaign events, seeing how they relate to people and how people react to them. So it's going to be a lot of time and a lot of talking and a lot of listening.
You were just talking about how Scott Wagner and Jermaine Reed are on some level on opposite sides of the issue when it comes to the American Jazz Museum, its future, what the city's role in that institution should be exactly. Are there other issues where you could say there are two candidates here who would be positioned kind of on opposite sides of it?
I'm not sure. And I will hesitate to say whether Jermaine Reed and Scott Wagner are on opposite sides. They maybe have different visions of how the city should manage relations at the museum. Possibly, I think, you know, with Jolie Justice and her role in the airport, leading the airport committee, I think probably anyone who has been critical of the process might be able to go after that process and link Jolie Justice with that. But I'm not sure that there are too many people who are on completely opposite sides here. When it comes to economic development, those who are advocating for more development on the cities, on kind of parts of the city that haven't gotten so much development, parts of the city that are not downtown, may be able to go after some of the council members' track record on that, particularly Phil Glynn, who was removed from the TIF commission for that controversial vote, may have a point of attack there.
You know, we've heard about just one candidate who's main issue seems to be Kansas City's homicide rate and violence in Kansas City, gun violence in particular. Is that something that we are hearing some of these other people weighing in on, having a record worth noting on?
Absolutely. I think in addition to Rita Barry, and we don't have, that's another one we'll have to get to know, because we know she has firsthand experience with it. But as far as a track record, we will have to dig into that a little more. Alicia Kennedy has also been vocal about the city's crime problem and says that, as you know, as a former assistant prosecuting attorney, has also seen a different side of this as well. But I do think that there's no way that the city's homicide problem isn't going to be something that every single candidate will have to talk about and will have to address.
Do you consider this a pretty crowded field a little under a year out?
I do think it's a crowded field. It's not the most crowded field Kansas City has had for a mayor, but I think particularly with the volume of sitting city council members that are running for mayor, it will be interesting to watch both on the campaign trail and in city council. These are council members that are supposed to work together for the betterment of the city, who are also now opponents and running against one another. And so it will be interesting to see how that dynamic plays out for the rest of this year and until that election.
And you were saying that more people could throw their hat in the ring.
There are definitely more people rumored to be considering a run. There are some campaign launches coming soon. We don't know whether that's, you know, a mayor or for another city council run, but we'll see.
Well, Lisa Rodriguez, thanks for the reminder that if we are not already doing our homework for the 2019 mayoral election in Kansas City, Missouri, it's time to get going.
Time to get going.
Lisa is KCUR's PM newscaster. Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you.
And that's a wrap. You can find anything we talked about on today's show at kcur.org/Central Standard. That's where we keep all our conversations so you can catch whatever you missed or share links with your friends. kcur.org/Central Standard. And keep talking to us on Twitter. We are at KCURCST. Tomorrow, how local immigrant communities are responding to the separation of parents and children at the U.S.-Mexico border. We'll have the editor of KC Hispanic News and an immigration lawyer here to answer your questions, particularly questions about children's rights. Be sure and tune in. This show is produced by Coy Duggar, Jen Chen, Suzanne Hogan, and Sylvia Maria Gross. With help from intern Trevor Hook, I'm Gina Kaufman. Stick around for Up to Date. That's coming right up.